If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Murder in the Morning with Tony Bruschi and Stacey Cole.
I don't think I've ever seen a judge as shaken as I've seen today. Why was she so shaken? What judge am I talking about? The judge in this case, Judge Beverly Canoe in the Karen Reed case. A hearing took place discussing many motions in the case, but it ended early. As judge said, I got to take some time here. Literally shaking. Yeah. How did we get here? Well, let me explain a little something to you about witnesses in a case. And if you know this, great. But, you know, a lot of folks don't. I can confess I didn't know about this until I really started diving into true crime. So when you have a case and you have witnesses, each side can have their own witnesses. And they have to disclose who those witnesses are and have to get approved and all that before they can come in and actually testify. Sometimes the court itself or the state or the government brings in a witness to be helpful to both sides and basically says, okay, this person is an expert witness. And we hear that a lot. And each side can have their own expert witnesses. But this here we're talking in this case is about an expert witness in the Karen Reed trial about accident reconstruction. Brought in basically to say, here's what we believe happened. Everybody do what you will based on the data that we're presenting to you. This data doesn't lie. It's another thing when one of those two sides decides, you know what? I think we're going to hire that witness and we're going to have them be an expert witness for us on our side. Now, if you were to disclose that and it were to be approved, there's nothing wrong with that. But if you don't disclose that and nobody is any the wiser and you've paid that witness a lot of money and you've even coached that witness on what to say and how to say it, and the judge and the jury and the defense are none the wiser, and they think this is just still, you know, you're just calling back that witness for your own, you know, defense and to testify. That starts to become an issue, a rather big issue.
Feels like a bit of a conflict of interest, no?
It's an insane conflict of interest and probably also illegal. So the prosecution in the case of Karen Reed today had a big issue with this. The main issue is that the defense alleges that basically there was a misrepresented relationship between an expert witness from ARCCA LLC and failed to disclose a financial agreement between them and the defense. Prosecutor Hank Brennan argued that ARCCA, this is the accident reconstruction experts, who were previously portrayed as neutral or federally retained, were actually working quite closely with the defense, with one invoice showing a $23,925 payment. Additionally, emails between the experts and the defense suggest potential coaching, with one expert allegedly asking if certain statements could be omitted. The prosecution sees this as an unfair advantage, rightfully so, and a violation of court-ordered discovery rules. potentially misleading the court and jury about the credibility and independence of the expert testimony. So how did this all go down? I'm going to take you back to the courtroom right now, and we're going to watch Hank Brennan argue his point to Judge Beverly Canoe. And we'll take a little break, and then we'll come back, and we'll see Judge's reaction. The literal shaken to her core reaction. But you need context. You need to build up to it. This is a portion, like the last or so 5 minutes of what he was saying in court today.
What we see back in March 22nd, 2024, is that there are conversations between the defense, Attorney Jackson, and Daniel Wolfe, who's one of these ARCA witnesses. Thank you so much for taking the time to get on the phone with me this morning pursuant to our conversation. Please feel free to forward an engagement letter to this email address. I will get that countersigned and return to you forthwith along with your retainer as required. Commonwealth, as I understand it, was not aware of any promise, rewards, or inducements or payment. They relied on a reciprocal discovery order of this court for that information. Response, hi, Alan. Subsequent to our conversation on Wednesday, the U.S. Attorney's Office asked we pause any further conversation until we received additional information from their office regarding how our involvement will move forward. Now, it's not the opinion that troubles me. It's the relationship, and Cromwell should have an even playing field. Saturday, June 22nd, Daniel Wolfe writes, Alan, I spent some time this morning putting together a brief outline of my qualifications, also attached my D&T list. I obviously won't say what the response is verbatim, but I gave you a general sense of what my response would be. Again, I thought your questioning during the voir dire was fantastic, so please feel free to make whatever changes you feel necessary. Now, this isn't information provided by the defense in reciprocal discovery. This is information provided by the federal government after numerous requests, two requests, and an insistent, the best I can, to get as much information as I can. We then are provided an outline of questions and answers for a direct examination. The Commonwealth did not have the luxury, the privilege, did not even know that there was an outline that was being disseminated by this totally independent witness who took no side other than that of the truth. What follows from this outline is then the outline with remarks from this independent expert who knows nobody. So we see in the margins in the notes, this fair-minded objective witness says, not being able to inspect the vehicle is something that is not uncommon in your line of work, and he writes, absolutely not, and then he comments, not sure if you want to put this somewhere in the direct examination. I have a feeling they, the Commonwealth, are going to argue. I didn't personally inspect the vehicle. I had enough information from the material I reviewed, so it wasn't necessary. Need to show the jury. It doesn't matter in this case.
What's the date of that?
It's not dated. The TUI request is a recent February response, but they send random documents. There's no real accounting. Now, I'm not saying that undermines the conclusions of ARCA, or not. I'm not saying they're not qualified witnesses, but it certainly shows some bias. I've turned over a lot less in this case than this. Another comment. Would it be fair to say because you had a lot of nighttime visibility work, your cases frequently involve pedestrians? Yes, unfortunately, there is a direct correlation between the time of day and pedestrian fatalities. Statistically speaking, most pedestrian fatalities occur during the evening and night hours. That would have been nice to have. So my specialty in the area of lighting and human factors results in a lot of my cases involving pedestrians. Pretty important stuff in this case. And then he comments, if you don't want me to say this, that's fine.
Ooh.
That's fine. Shh. Don't tell them.
Uh-oh.
Have you qualified as an expert in court before? Yes. I realize my testimony, I said it 20 times when you asked how many I've been qualified. I misinterpreted the question. My fault. 11 trials, 7 depositions. Not sure if you want me to clear that up. I don't know if it was ever cleared up. And then a bill from ARCA to the defense for $23,925. That's not Tramble. That's not trial by ambush. That's getting duped. So, I didn't know any of this, but I've tried a few cases. I've been around the federal court a little bit. I know how it works. And sometimes parties pick sides. It creates an imbalance, an unfairness, and then it allows the ability of one side to use ghosts. They create illusions and shields and say something's there and something's happening, a federal investigation, and this person, and then this happens. I don't care if the ARCA witnesses testify at trial. I don't care about their opinions, but I care that it's unfair, imbalanced, and hidden. And the Commonwealth, like the defense, is entitled to discovery. So if they can produce the discovery, I'd welcome ARCA.
All right, I'm going to take a recess before the
court. All right, please.
Yeah, so Bev needs a moment there, and we'll get to her reaction in just a second. But there was a lot to take in. And no matter what side you're on in the Karen Reed case, you can't think that that's okay. If the other side did it, you wouldn't be cool with it. If you're on the side of
Karen. Oh, my goodness. This
is just a fundamental, this is not how the game is played. It's not. You can't do that sort of thing. It violates law. It violates rules of discovery. And that's just simply not how our court system works. It wasn't an ambush. It was being duped, as he said.
Well, and that's exactly what's going on. I mean, it raises huge ethical concerns here. That's not the way these courts operate. So this entire time, they've been operating under false pretenses.
Mm-hmm.
And that taints the way the jury looks at things. That taints the way the judge looks at things. So this could push the trial back even further in how evidence is going to be presented in the future. There could be significant penalties, if not licensure.
There's a lot. A lot that could easily happen here. And Judge Cano has been a very, I think, stoic judge for the most part on this case. Mm-hmm. Pretty just, I don't get that she's, you know, really for one side or the other. She's been very middle of the road, I think, being a very fair judge, honestly. And someone who I think, you know, really strong-willed and really has her shit together. Seeing her come out of her chambers with this reaction was beyond concerning. Take a look.
Commonwealth just provided the court with information that causes me grave concern. The implications of that information may have profound effects on this defense and defense counsel. So for that reason, I'm going to suspend today so that when we meet again to address these issues, all affected will be appropriately prepared. So I'll see you a week from today at 11 o'clock in the morning.
I mean, she's like literally, she's out of breath as if she just, mm-hmm. I mean, I can, you know, we've all been in moments like that where it's just like, you're not out of breath because you just ran up a flight of stairs or so. It's because you just got something that literally took your breath away. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see her. You can watch her, because we're going to watch a little bit more of this and hear a little bit more of this. She is physically shaking by what she just heard and what just happened in those chambers with the information that was disclosed to her, even more than what was just disclosed right there in open court. I heard this through audio today before I even saw the video. I was on the air with Bob, and Bob had, did you see what happened with Karen? And I'm like, no. And he just held up his phone and just played that Judge Beverly piece for me. And I said, listen to her voice. I mean, just her voice, you can tell she is shaken by this, but it is visible as well. Here's a few more minutes of this as she wraps up the court, and then we'll explain what this all potentially means if there was misconduct by the defense, and that will be taken up next week. But we're going to go through the roads of what could happen. So here's a little bit more from Judge Beverly Cano today.
You can tell me now if that is impossible for you. And where the federal authorities have been kind enough in the past to allow me to have copies of everything, would you be kind enough to call over there or check with whomever you were dealing with to see if I can in fact get a copy of everything that you just read?
I can, and there's a brief chronology I think Your Honor should be aware of. If I could add that right now, it would take me less than a minute. The chronology is December 4th, we sent another TUI request, 2024. January 6th, we filed our notice of intention to exclude ARCA experts. January 30th, 2025, the United States Attorney's Office sent a response to both ours and the defense requests. Without any prompting, on February 6th, 2025, the defense and the prosecution received an email from the U.S. Attorney's Office saying that the contract had ended with the ARCA experts and that if either party wanted to engage, the original materials are still protected. This was a change in position about whether a party could engage. On February 11th, we filed the motion to exclude. February 13th, the defense provided us the emails that I read. February 13th, 2025, I think I said the federal government. It was the defense. February 13, 2025, they sent us the emails and the direct examination outline. We reached out to the federal government again because I was curious about the change in position on February 6th, that the contract has ended, but that parties could contact ARCA. Obviously, the Commonwealth is in no position to contact ARCA because that would naturally preclude the defense from retaining them. So we've refrained and we will not reach out to them.
All right. So the information that was provided to you, not from the federal government, I'd like a copy of before you leave the courthouse today.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. 11 o'clock a week from today.
Your Honor.
And they basically just go into their scheduling. And such.
And it changed. So if don't take that as verbatim as to 11 o'clock. I think they settled on, let me look at the calendar.
It's had to listen to 25th, it. 25th, I believe. Or
25th, yeah. 10 a.m. Central Time, yep. 11 o'clock Eastern.
So what does all of this mean? Well, it means potential misconduct by the defense. And if the defense misrepresented the independence of ARCA's witness or failed to disclose financial relationships, it could constitute an ethical breach. Judges take misrepresentation in court filings seriously. And if the defense withheld key details about their witness relationships, well, it could warrant sanctions or even legal consequences. That's not a good thing. I mean, that could end careers right there.
Yeah. We've got a very, and you know, when this trial was going on, I was joking that, ooh, you know, Alan Jackson, rawr, you know, hotsy-totsy lawyer, all this stuff. He's got quite a presence in California. He is a very famous attorney. His reputation is quite startling when you look at who he's represented and the cases he's had.
Just call him Dreamy, Stacey. Just get over it. Just call him Dreamy.
I'm not going to call him Dreamy. He is.
Should I put up a picture of Luigi Mangione next?
No.
We'll just go down the list of people you shouldn't be fans of.
Well, right, but he's charismatic. He embodies what you would want your attorney to be. So this coming down, you know, whether he did it or somebody on the team did this, it is going to come crashing the fuck down.
And it's not really going to matter a whole. I mean, you do have to look at intent, but right. Could this have been a misstep and oversight? Possibly. There's tons of people that work on this case. It's not just like Alan Jackson sitting there going, did I do this today? Did I check this box and let this person know this? A lot of times you rely on your people, your staff, your other attorneys to do those functions for you, and people are human, and could someone have made a mistake? Does this mean it was some sort of an intentional, let's sway the jury this way or let's not tell? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. It could be no. It could be yes. But right now we're kind of sitting in a big I don't know state. And either way, even if it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, it had the effects that it had. The fact that they were presenting the witness one way when it wasn't, or they failed to disclose. So if ARCA experts were positioned as impartial, federally connected witnesses, but are now actually revealed to have been financially tied to the defense, their credibility, obviously, it's going to be undermined. Again, not saying, I think they're being very clear. I don't think the ARCA witnesses had any ill intent on any of this. I think they were being hired to do this, and they're going to assume you're doing your job behind the scenes under legal manners, under legal pretenses to be hiring this expert witness. It's not their job to go and second check the legalese of how you obtained that person as a witness. So, however, in public view, that's going to undermine it. It's going to make people, you're part of that crew, you know, that kind of did this in a shady way. If it was done in a shady way, again, we don't know. It's going to call into question their previous testimony and prompt the judge to probably limit their involvement in the retrial, if allowed at all. And then there's broader legal consequences. If the judge believes that the issue extends beyond this particular motion, she may be considering larger ramifications, including whether the defense's handling of this matter has tainted the trial process. Judges are cautious when they sense any potential miscarriage of justice. And her reaction today suggests she sees this as more than a simple procedural dispute. Mm-hmm. I have never seen a judge react like that.
Yeah, that was profound. This is somebody, I'm going to characterize people out east. My spouse travels out east frequently, and we kind of joke, you know, about their Boston accent.
Yeah,
you know, get in the car.
Yeah,
you know, we're going to Dunkin', let's go, you know. And they're very straightforward and take no crap from anybody.
Sure.
And blunt, and she kind of embodies that spirit of an Eastern United States person. Very tough, like you said, very stoic. Nothing rattles her. Like, get out of my way. I'm going down the street, you know?
Yes, I think that nothing rattles her. That's a good way of saying it, because you think of that, nothing rattles her. She was rattled, yes.
Yes.
She was, still physically rattling. I'm not trying to, overplay it, but she was shaking, taking her glasses off. She's, you know, think of yourself when you've been in a situation like that. You got some sort of news and it's just like you are rattled. That was her, if you didn't see the video, because I know a good chunk of our listenership and viewership, it's strictly from podcasts. But we are on YouTube now, everybody, in case you want to watch our stuff. Just search for Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. So the possibility of a mistrial before a trial even starts here is very real, and it probably is going to happen. If the judge believes this issue is serious enough, she could delay the trial, hold additional hearings, or even rule that Reed's defense engaged in conduct that warrants drastic legal remedies. While not yet at that stage, her strong wording indicates she is weighing significant steps. It's on her mind that she is saying that out loud about what this could mean for the defense's counsel. And she had a lot of words in there of just how serious all of this is.
I think for a judge to use her wording, I think is very deliberate. Somebody in my life is in law, and he chooses his words for a reason. So for her to have said grave concern, yeah, you can equate that as the death of a case, basically, the death of their defense.
Yeah, meaning Karen Reed's attorneys may be fired. Not by Karen Reed, by the government. saying you, nope, sorry, you violated this and you're out. If the judge rules in favor of the prosecution, the defense will lose one of their key arguments as well, accident reconstruction. Without these witnesses, the defense's claims that Reed's SUV could not have caused O'Keefe's injuries may be significantly weakened. The jury is not yet seated. Credibility battles start early, though. If Judge Cano finds the defense engaged in questionable witness dealings, the prosecution could use this to paint Reed's entire case as deceptive. And the legal consequences, if the judge determines that the defense knowingly withheld financial ties or coordinated testimony inappropriately, and that's the key part there, knowingly. There are errors, and I'm sure this is people's lives and careers hanging in the balance on something like this. So that has to be very carefully examined. How did this happen? Was it knowingly? I would think people of this ilk and of this level of expertise in law, they know better. I wouldn't think that they would put them everything on the line for Karen Reed and knowingly do this. But I don't know. And that's what they're going to have to take a look at. It could lead to professional consequences to Reed's attorneys, including possible disciplinary actions or sanctions from the court. And with the judge suspending proceedings to reassess this issue, it's going to push the retrial back, very likely, forcing both sides to recalibrate their strategies before the trial even begins. The next motion hearing is set to resume on February 25th. It's now shaping up to be one of the most pivotal moments in this case, and we're not even in trial. And as we saw on Judge's face today, this, whatever it is, what she heard behind closed doors, beyond what we heard there in the courtroom, this is going to be a game changer.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. He was charming, handsome, a devoted husband, a doting father. When his wife died tragically in a freak accident, everyone pitied him. He played the role so well, grieving widower, devastated, single dad, just trying to put the pieces back together. But the thing about perfect men, they're usually hiding something. And this one was hiding everything. The affair, the insurance policy, the other wife in another state who had no idea she was married to a walking crime scene. If she had only subscribed to True Crime Today, Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, she could have listened to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi ad-free. And before everyone else, she could have seen through the lies. She could have gotten out while she still had the chance. Instead, she's just another case we'll be covering next week. Don't be her. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.